Blog Talk Radio.
I dedicate this song to recession, depression, and unemployment. This song is for you.
Today's a new day, but there is no sunshine. Nothing but clouds, and it's dark in my heart, and it feels like a cold night. Today's a new day, but where are my blue skies? Where is the love and the joy that you promised to tell me it's alright?
I'll be honest with you,
I almost gave up, but a power that I can't explain fell from heaven like a shower.
When I think how much better I'm gonna be when this is over,
but
today's a new day. Hello out there, podcast man. Welcome. Welcome. This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast, and this is the Messenger Edition. This is Nurse Carmen. We have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And again, thank you for tuning in to the Messenger. Ron Hodge.
Good evening and welcome all to tonight's edition, Let's Talk. Tonight we want to just go over some of the things in which we went over before, because we've got to understand, just as with religion and their teaching, it was over and over until they were able to get it within you so that you would know it. So one of the things I wanted to start off is just to let everybody know that God talks to everyone all the time. The question is, the question is not to whom do God talk, but who listens. First, let's exchange the word talk with the word communicate. It's a much better word, a much fuller, more accurate one. When we try to speak to each other, and to God, to you to God, we are immediately constricted by the unbelievable limitation of words. For this reason, God does not communicate by words alone. In fact, rarely does he do so. The most common form of communication is through feelings. Feelings is the language of the soul. If you want to know what's true for you about something, look to how you're feeling about it. Feelings are sometimes difficult to discover and often even more difficult to acknowledge. Yet hidden in your deepest feelings is your highest truth. The trick is to get to those feelings. And through our conversations, I'll show you how to get to those feelings. God also communicates with thoughts. Thoughts and feelings are not the same. Although they can occur at the same time, in communicating with thoughts, God often uses images and pictures. For this reason, thoughts are more effective than mere words as tools of communication. In addition to feelings and thoughts, God also used the vehicle of experience as a grand communicator. And finally, when feelings and thoughts and experiences all fail, God uses words. Words are really the least effective communicator. They are most often to interpretation, most often misunderstood. And you say, why is that? It is because of what words are. Words are merely utterance noises that stand for feelings, thoughts, and experience. They are symbols, signs. They are not truth. They are not the real thing. Words may help you understand something. Experience allows you to know. Yet there are some things we cannot experience. So God has given you other tools of knowing. And these are called feelings. And so too, thoughts. Now the supreme irony here is that you have all placed so much importance on the word of God and so little on the experience. In fact, you place so little value on experience that when what you experience of God differs from what you've heard of God, you automatically discard the experience and own the words, when you should be just the other way around. Your experiences and your feelings are about a thing represents what you factually and intuitively know about that thing. Words can only seek to symbolize what you know and can often confuse what you know. These things are the tools with which God communicates, yet they are not the methods, for not all feelings, not all thoughts, not all experiences, and not all words are from God. Many words have been uttered by others in God's name. Many thoughts and feelings have been sponsored by causes not of God's direct creation. Many experiences result from these. The challenge is one of discernment. The difficulty in knowing the difference between message from God and data from another source. Discrimination is a simple matter with the application of a basic rule. God is always your highest thought, your clearest words, your grandest feeling, and anything less is from another source. And remember when I said another source, how sometimes we get the soul and the mind confused when we're talking. Sometimes the soul is telling us something, and then we allow the mind to overrule what it is that the soul is telling us. So this is what I'm referring to when I say another source. Now the task of differentiating between becomes easy, for it should not be difficult even for the beginning student to identify the highest, the clearest, and the grandest. Yet, will God give you these guidelines? The highest thought is always that thought which contains joy. The clearest words are those words which contain truth. The grandest feeling is that feeling which you call love. Joy, truth, and love. These three are interchangeable, and one always leads to the other. It matters not in which order they are placed. Having with these guidelines determined which messages are from God and which have come from another source, the only question remaining is whether God's message would be heeded. Most of God's messages are not. Some because they seem too good to be true. Others because they seem too difficult to follow. Many because they are simply misunderstood. Most because they are not received. God's most powerful message is experience. And even this you ignore, especially this you ignore. The world would be in its present condition were you to have simply listened to your experiences. The result of you not listening to your experiences is that you keep reliving it over and over again. For God's purpose will not be thwarted, nor God will be ignored. You will get the message sooner or later. We keep getting it wrong with the message from God and from other sources, but please know, sooner or later, you will get it. God will not force you to. However, he will never coerce you, because God has given you a free will, the power to do as you choose, and God would never take that away from you, ever. And so we will continue sending you, so God will continue sending you the same message over and over again throughout the millennium and to whatever corner of the universe you occupy. Endlessly will God send you messages until you have received them and held them close, calling them your own. God's message will come in 100 forms, at 1,000 moments, across 1,000,000 years. You cannot miss them if you truly listen. You cannot ignore them once truly heard. Thus will our communication begin in earnest. For in the past, you have only talked to God, praying to God, interceding with God, beseeching God. Yet now can we talk back to you, to God, even as we are doing now. What? So you say, how can I know the communication is from God, and how do I know that this is not my own imagination? And I say to you, what would be the difference? Do you not see that God could just as easily work through your imagination as anything else? God will bring you the exact right thought, words, or feeling at any given moment, suited precisely to the purpose at hand, using one device or several. You will know these words are from God because you, of your own accord, have never spoken so clearly. Have you already spoken so clearly on these questions, you would not be asking. All people are special, and all moments are golden. There is no person, and there is no time, one more special than another. Many people choose to believe that God communicates in special ways and only with special people. This removes the masses of the people from responsibility for hearing God's message, much less receiving it, which is another matter, and allowing them to take someone else's word for everything. You don't have to listen to God, for you've already decided that others have heard from him and on every subject, and you have to listen to them. So you don't need to listen to God. You can just listen to the pastors and the messengers and stuff, because you don't have to listen to God because they already heard from him. So this is part of why we're not, as the co-producer like to say, directly connected. Even though we are connected, we don't understand it. And we look to other people when we are already directly connected. By listening to what other people think they heard God say, you don't have to think at all. This is the biggest reason for most people turning from God's message on a personal level. If you acknowledge that you are receiving a message from God directly, then you are responsible for interpreting them. It is far safer and much easier to accept the interpretation of others, even others who have lived 2,000 years ago, than to seek to interpret the message you may very well be receiving in this moment. Yet, I invite you to a new form of communication with God, a two-way communication. In truth, it is you who have invited God into you right now. For God has come to you in this form right now in answer to your call. Then you say, why do some people take Christ, for example, seem to hear more of the communication than others? And that's because some people are willing to actually listen. They are willing to hear, and they are willing to remain open to the communication, even when it seems scary or crazy or downright wrong. We should listen to God even when what's being said seems wrong, especially when it seems wrong. If you think you are right about everything, who needs to talk to God?
Amen.
Go ahead and act on all that you know, but notice that you've been doing that since time began, and look at what shape the world is in. Clearly, you've missed something. Obviously, there is something you don't understand. That which you do understand, you seem right to you, because right is a term you use to designate something with which you agree. What you've missed will therefore appear at first to be wrong. The only way to move forward on this is to ask yourself, what would happen if everything I thought was wrong was actually right? Even great scientists know about this. When what a scientist does is not working, a scientist sets aside all of the assumptions and start over. All great discoveries have been made from a willingness and ability to not be right. And that's what's needed here. You cannot know God until you stop telling yourself that you already know God. You cannot hear God until you stop thinking that you've already heard God. God cannot tell you his truth until you stop telling yours. No prayer, and a prayer is nothing more than a fervent statement of what is so, goes unanswered. Every prayer, every thought, every statement, every feeling is created to the degree that it is fervent held as truth. To that degree will it be made manifest in your experience. When it is said that a prayer has not been answered, what has actually happened is that the most fervent held thought, word, or feeling has become operative. Yet, what you must know, and here is the secret, is that always it is the thought behind the thought, what might be called the sponsoring thought, that is the controlling thought. If therefore you beg and supplicate, there seems a much smaller chance that you will receive what you think you are choosing, because the sponsoring thought behind every supplication is that you do not have. Now that you wish, that sponsoring thought becomes your reality. So the thought behind every supplication is that you do not have now what you wish, and that sponsoring thought becomes your reality. So if you're begging and pleading for something, you're actually saying, I don't have it. And so the sponsoring thought says you don't have it. And so that's what the universe sees, you saying you don't have it. So if you're saying you don't have it, the universe is saying, okay, you don't have it. It's the sponsoring thought. So this is what we have to be mindful of. The only sponsoring thought which could override this thought is the thought held in faith that God will grant whatever is asked without fail. Some people have such faith, but very few. The process of prayer becomes much easier when, rather than having to believe that God will always say yes to every request, one understands intuitively that the request itself is not necessary. Then the prayer is a prayer of thanksgiving. It is not a request at all, but a statement of gratitude for what is so.
Wow.
Yeah. So when you say, when I say that a prayer is a statement of what is so, are you saying that God does nothing that everything will happen after a prayer is a result of the prayer's action? If you believe that God is some omniperson being here, I'm sorry, being who hears all prayers, says yes to some, no to others, and maybe not to the rest, you are mistaken. By what rule of thumb would God decide? If you believe that God is the creator and decider of all things in your life, guess what? You are mistaken. God is the observer, not the creator. And God stands ready to assist you in living your life, but not in the way you might expect. It is not God's function to create or uncreate the circumstances or conditions of your life. God created you in the image and likeness of God. You have created the rest through the power God has given you. God creates the process of life and life itself as you know it, yet God gives you free choice to do with life as you will. In this sense, your will for you is God's will for you. See, and that's something that we have to come to understand. Your will for you is God's will for you. And so you are living your life the way you are living your life, and God has no preference in the matter. This is the grand illusion in which we have engaged, that God cares one way or the other what you do. God do not care what you do, and it is hard for you to hear. Yet, do you care about what your children do when you send them out into play? It is a matter of consequence to you whether they are playing tag or hide and seek or pretend. No, it is not, because you know they are perfectly safe. You have placed them in an environment which you consider friendly and very okay. Of course, you will always hope that they do not hurt themselves, and if they do, you'll be right there to help them, heal them, allow them to feel safe again, to be happy again, to go and play again another day. But whether they choose hide or seek or pretend will not matter to you the next day either. You will tell them, of course, which games are dangerous to play. But you cannot stop your children from doing dangerous things. Not always. Not forever. Not in every moment from now until death. It is the wise parent who knows this. Yet the parent never stops caring about the outcome. It is the dichotomy, not caring deeply about the process, but caring deeply about the results, that comes close to describing the dichotomy of God. Yet God, in a sense, does not even care about the outcome, not the ultimate outcome. This is because the ultimate outcome is assured. And this is the second great illusion of man, that the outcome of life is in doubt. It is this doubt about ultimate outcome that has created your greatest enemy, which is fear. For if you doubt outcome, then you must doubt creator. You must doubt God. And if you doubt God, you must live in fear and guilt all your life. If you doubt God's intention and God's ability to produce the ultimate result, then how can you ever relax? How can you ever truly find peace? Yet God has full power to match intentions with results. You cannot and will not believe in this, even though you claim that God is all-powerful, and so you have to create in your imagination a power equal to God in order that you may find a way for God's will to be thwarted. And so you have created in your mythology the being we call the devil. You have imagined a God at war, this being thinking that God solves problems the way we do. We think God solves problems the way we do. So now all of a sudden there's a war between God and this mythical creature called the devil. All of these violate everything you say you know about God. But this doesn't matter. You live your illusion and thus feel your fear, all out of your decision to doubt God. But what if you were made, what if you make a new decision? What then would the results, would be the results? I tell you this, you would live as Buddha did, as Jesus did every saint you have ever idolized. Yet, as with most of these saints, people would not understand you. And when you tried to explain your sense of peace, your joy in life, your inner ecstasy, they would listen to your words, but not hear them. They would try to repeat your words, but would add to them. They would wonder how you could have what they cannot find. And then they would grow jealous. Soon jealousy would turn to rage. And in their anger, they would try to convince you that it is you who do not understand God. And if they were unsuccessful at tearing you from your joy, they would seek to harm you. So enormously would be their rage, and when you told them it does not matter, that even death cannot interrupt your joy nor change your truth, they would surely kill you. Then, when they saw the peace with which you accepted death, they would call you saint and love you again. For it is the nature of people to love, then destroy, then love again that which they value most. All human actions are motivated at their deepest level by one of two emotions, fear or love. In truth, there are only two emotions, only two words in the language of the soul. These are the opposite ends of the great polarity which God has created when he produced the universe and our world as we know it today. These are the two points, the Alpha and the Omega, which allows the system you call relativity to be. Without these two points, without these two ideas about things, no other idea could exist. Every human thought and every human action is based in either love or fear. There is no other human motivation, and all other ideas are but derivatives of these two. They are simply different versions, different twists on the same theme. Think on this deeply, and you will see that it's true. This is what I have called the sponsoring thought. It is either a thought of love or fear. This is the thought behind the thought behind the thought. It is the first thought. It is prime force. It is the raw energy that derives the energy of human experience. Now, I went over a lot today, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to hear what it is that was said today, and I pray that the soul heard something in this speaking to you so that you can better understand what it is, the message that I'm trying to allow God to use me to open up your inner self, your God self, to better understand and call back to your remembrance. It is important for us to remember these things, that we are so much more than what we've been led to believe. We are creators, created in the image and the likeness of God. So on that note, as we get ready to end this podcast, I pray that everyone had a great, outstanding week. And don't let anybody steal your joy, knowing that you are connected to the source. God bless you all. Have a great weekend. And I'll talk to you all again Thursday night. Love you all.
Amen. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.